Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagone, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Aginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. Well, hello everybody. It's Blue Otter tonight, and we've got Fox from the Spirit Investigators Para Research. Say hello.
How's it going, everybody?
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity to have me on, and I'm looking forward to this interview.
We'll just imagine that we hear the in the background, you know, and this subject is like really popular the last few years, and I don't know anybody that hasn't had, you know, some kind of experience. And so you're a sister show in paranormal realm, and I thought I'd get you on. And just tell the folks about, you know, how you started doing this and what kind of stuff you do, and tell some ghost stories.
Well, I have quite a few, but let's go ahead and start with how I started off, I guess. I didn't have the experience, the face-to-face experience with spirit activity or quote-unquote paranormal activity. My wanting to delve into this realm or this subject was based on my I had the unfortunate death in a family, a brother that was drowned, and it was kind of mysterious. That he was a Navy sailor. The guy had been thrown out of the middle of the ocean as part of his training, and you know, somehow it was just one of those type things where he drowned at this place where kids were swimming and all that. So there was never any closure as to what really happened. There was always that the question of did he have a heart attack, did he faint, and so. It was one of those things where I started doing research and got really into it, and it was almost as if when I set out to do it, I almost had a good sense of what I needed to get, what equipment I need to get. It's almost as if I was being led into this field by pure intuition. And the first time that I got all the stuff in, I set it up, and within minutes I got a reply. And the basic question was, if he had died from a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
I got an EVP that was pretty clear, and it said heart failure, and it just kept repeating that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, at that moment, I knew there was something to it, and I needed to explore it further. And so at that point, believe it or not, for the next year, I set aside everything. My life came to a stop or a temporary halt, where I delved into the research completely. I forgot about social life. I forgot about work. I forgot about making money. Forgot about dating, going out, all those things that, were part of my life. It changed overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one to go at full swing. I don't go in with one foot in, one foot out. I'm like a real hardcore, I'm real.
Yeah, you and me both.
I'm obsessive with everything I do. So when I went into it, it was like, everything out of the way. I need some answers to these questions I have. I really want to explore this for the whole year. It was like, that's all I did every day. Communication at my house. It wasn't like I was waiting for that investigation to go to. By the time most people, generally speaking, they wait for an investigation. You don't need that. If you have the instruments, you can do it at your home or anywhere in the world. For all I know, you could be in a restroom in Calcutta, and you're going to have some form of communication.
Uh-huh.
At least that's what I found throughout this whole, in-depth exploration.
Uh-huh. Well,
but anyways,
here we are. Yeah, let me tell you a couple of real-life ghost stories of my own. I've been widowed twice, and I've lost both parents now and my sister. And we had a lot of preparation when my first wife died. That's my son's mother. And she was a person that started me on this, walking by the spirit, and taught me, what to look for and what the feelings were and everything. And we had an agreement that she says, look, I'm dying young. Her mom died at 51. Joanne died at 48 when I was 40. And she said, I'm always going to be there for you. And I've seen her many times, but the night she, after she passed away, well, what's really interesting is we kind of threw a impromptu Native American funeral for her. I got a whole bunch of sage and tied it together in what are called wands, with red cloth. Made 44 of them,
right.
A sacred number. Threw 59 in the vault underneath. Go ahead.
So basically some smudging sticks that you configured in them.
Okay. Yeah. And we, half of them on top of the casket and put the casket in the ground. And then after the funeral, I went over with her best friend and my son to Walmart. And I'm stepping out of the bathroom, and I took two steps, and it was like I was walking through a campfire. So that someone had just thrown that entire box of sage. And if you ever smelled sage burning, it's real strong.
Yes.
And I smelled this, and I ran out, and I said, "Hey, Joanne, or Betty and Joe, come," and they didn't smell it. But on the way home, I went to sleep. It was about a 100-mile drive, and they smelled it. And but that night, while I was asleep, I heard Joanne's voice, And she very pertly reported, she says, "I'm not dead." And then five months later, I married almost immediately her best friend Betty, and her brother died 5 months later. And we all went down to their mom's house, you know, for the funeral, and we were sleeping on the floor of the apartment. And just as the morning light was coming through, I was barely awake. That's usually when I hear stuff. I heard his voice. I heard him giggle. Robert, Richard was a funny guy. Go ahead.
So you're saying this was completely audible to the ear? It was not like you captured it on recording and then
I heard it.
I mean, you audibly heard it.
I heard it, and he laughed and he says, "Well," he's laughed like he says he says, "Well," he says, "I guess I'm dead," and he told me a couple of things that were cultural related to Cherokee to tell. And Celts, you know. He said, "Well, I'll tell you what." He says, "Tell Mom we're Paint Clan Cherokees, and we're from the Celtic Wielded Sword Clan." And then Betty passed away in 2007, and that night, about 12 hours after she passed, I heard her voice as I was sleeping. Well, there was three different things that happened that night. I felt something bumped the bed, I thought it was a mouse because I heard something rattling. I was in a motel room at the time, so I turned the light on and looked around, and then I went back to sleep. And then I heard her voice, and she said, "When did this happen?" You know, she'd had a stroke, and she'd been unconscious for the better part of 6 weeks. And
okay.
And then 45 minutes later, you know, this is the sleep cycle, I heard way off in the distance, I heard her, the song that we agreed we were going to play at the funeral, which is Amazing Grace. And it sounded like it was way far away. And let me preface this by saying Betty had borderline personality disorder because of sexual abuse as a child. And, you know, she had some anger issues. And just as she got to the point in the song, the volume went from like on the 5 on a scale of 100 up to 100, and it was saying, "And saved a wretch like me." And then it immediately dropped down to and I could hear the rest of the song singing. And but yeah, it's like, wow, you know, I've had some experiences. When my dad told me that when his mom passed away, everybody felt the chill, and that, you know, they did the traditional Scandinavian thing where you leave a window open, and yeah, it was summertime, but everybody felt the chill and saw the drapes rustle, you know, so yeah, it's you know, death is interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's rare really to get a audible, you know, voice, because what I have, based on the research and the experiments that I've done, they are below the normal hearing level, you know, of 20 hertz or whatever it is. And normally, you know, I've had to really get like a real powerful amplifier, you know, like at least us decibels to hear them without any kind of what I call a wave carrier to modulate on, which would be either, you know, a noise, white noise, or whether it's random bits of audio or any kind of sound wave. Apparently, the mechanism from what I've observed is that they're using the sound waves, and they use them to kind of modulate from the sound waves that are in the atmosphere within the wherever it is that you're conducting the session.
Mm-hmm.
And one very important discovery in my research was what I you know, call the dog bark carrier, you know, because what happened was that I noticed that through pure amplification, There was a barking dog across the but with an amplifier, with a very powerful amplifier, I could hear the dog bark as it's traveling over, you know, through the air, the sound wave of the dog bark, and you hear it go from a dog bark, but it just kind of morphs. In other words, like, the dog bark becomes a message once it ends up on the recorder. And so it's almost like it was a form of modulation via sound waves. And so the dog bark, to make a long story short, the dog bark became a message, an EVP.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a human, and it was a human voice.
Mm-hmm.
At least it sounded like a human voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, clearly they know how to operate on the electromagnetic spectrum. And
right. For the ones that I've heard audibly, actually we're in a group, and it was an interesting setting because this was an investigation at an actual Episcopalian church, and you know there were for the minister from a church to contact you as a paranormal investigator is always interesting, because here normally it's something that they don't usually talk about, especially if it's happening at a church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about that was that at least the audible EVP that we all heard was a woman who was kind of humming, you know, and she's humming,
mm-hmm.
which is really, even to this day, I think about it, because when she's humming, God would not leave us, you know, and it's like she's saying
mm-hmm.
us. But she's saying God would not believe us in a humming way, like, and
mm-hmm.
this was audible. As soon as I got out there, you know, I guess I was a EVP specialist, so I get there, deploy my equipment. As soon as I start the recorder, this came through, like as if she was waiting for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyways,
well, yeah.
it is really rare to hear it audibly. And the whole group was like, did you hear the humming? Did you hear somebody? And everybody's like, was that your phone? You know, in the recording, you hear like, was that your phone? You know, you hear a group of people questioning, what was that? And they didn't really make it out. But, you know, when you hear it on the recording, it's very clear that she's humming this. And for her to be at a church and then to say God would not believe us.
Yeah. I
posed a lot of questions.
Yeah, I had one other strange experience. I may remember some others, but back in '89, we had been on the road for 3 years traveling, and I found natural gas leaks for a company, and the work ran out, so we went back to where we came from, and like the next day we got back, a really close friend of ours who was a spiritual teacher passed away. She'd had a long illness. And so we went to the funeral. And in the Hebrew tradition, a spirit has to hang around 3 days. And they have to return every year on what's called a Yahrzeit. It's the anniversary of their passing. And Orthodox Hebrews, I know in Jerusalem, anytime they find there was an apartment building that was built on top of a family vault, and by law they had to leave a pipe. They left a 3-inch PVC pipe, supposedly for the spirit to come and go as if they needed it. But anyway, the next day, I'm sitting in, we lived in a basement apartment, and there wasn't, I was in a room doing some work on an old Commodore computer. There wasn't any ventilation in the room. And
Commodore.
Yeah, I'm talking, you know, 1989. And I was playing the helicopter. You know, I love that helicopter battle. Oh, gosh, I played that for hours. Something blew in my ear. I swear to God. And wasn't my imagination. And boy, it got my attention, and but I figured, hey, it was probably Rhea, you know, she was letting me know, hey, I'm here and looking out for you, and it's a fascinating subject. Do you remember the movie Billy Jack?
I never saw it.
It during the movie, Billy Jack is explaining how he's getting ready to introduce him to the ghost dance. Originally, it was called the Dance of Welcome and Friendship. I'd like to play a 2-minute. This is a clip from the movie. I didn't just isolate, you know, what he was talking about, the spirit world, but I have a listen to what. Now, this is Tom Laughlin playing Billy Jack. It was like 1975, but this information he got directly from Wovoka's grandson, who taught the cast and crew the Paiute tradition about the spirit world and just how thin the veil is. It'll run for about 2 minutes, and here goes.
The time is now when the Indian will triumph.
He's still in the rapture of the vision. A great Indian holy man, Wovoka, is speaking through him.
You mean they had holy men like saints?
They sure did, and Wovoka was one of the greatest. Once even Christ appeared to him.
And the whole spiritual wisdom of the great holy men of the Indian tradition is now what the young people of the world are looking for.
I wonder if I have the guts.
This is crazy, man. You pull that trigger and we'll never get out of here alive.
The young whites, they know there is a supernatural world and a great spirit, and they try to reach the great spirit. They try by drugs. They are made to do this because their religions no longer believe in the other world. Heaven is not out there. The other world is here. The great spirit, Messiah, the Christ, are here in this pit. Your people, my loved ones, there's a thin veil separating us from them. The whites do not know how to reach through that veil. They do not have the belief, and they cannot touch their loved ones or the other spirits.
I could do it. I could kill
them. Yeah, sure you can, but not now, man. Let's get out of here and get some help.
And lastly, you must learn the dance. The dance of friendship and welcome, in which all whites who come to you with open hearts must be taught the dance in the Indian way. Rise up now, and I will teach you the dance exactly as Wovoka has seen it should be done.
Yeah, we'll be back, but not with help. I'm going to get him all by myself.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. So that's the tradition. That's and to traditional Native American, I mean, there's no death, just a change of worlds.
Well, and I think it's also very important that you mention that there is a thin veil that separates us from this. I call it a dimension. I try not to get too metaphysical. I think that if you stay away from. And this is a perfect example, you know. In science, I just refer it as just simply perception. The spirit world, a dimension, another dimension, simple as that. And, you know, not only is there a thin veil that's separating us, but the veil is certainly getting thinner. We are getting more reports now about supernatural or quote-unquote paranormal activity more than ever. And this is not specific to any location. It's not specific to state. It's a global quickening or thinning of the veil. And, you know, the fact that it's more mainstream in itself is a big indicator of that. Of that thinning, of that raising of the volume. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a consensus also on our end is that the veil's getting thinner. And I think, well, the other thing that my first wife and I noticed back in the 80s was this huge upsurge of near-death experiences and books about them. And we looked at each other, and one day I said, what do you think about all this? And she said, you know what? She says, I kind of wonder if Creator isn't getting people ready on a mass scale. It's maybe like something might happen. You know, I've got a close friend who is a traditional Cherokee, spent 30 years in the Air Force, and he worked at Cheyenne Mountain. He said, you wouldn't believe how many times we came close to, you know, accidentally going into nuclear war. But yeah, it's really Betty Eady and other books like hers have really piqued the attention of the American public, you know, starting back in the 80s. It's not like everybody else wasn't curious about death and how it works.
I think in my personal research, that was a very important element also to explore, to fully understand everything as far as why this happens, how it happens. The near-death experience research was extremely important. And not only that, but also the out-of-body experience and the mechanism behind it and the experiences that people have reported. And not only that, but actually engaging to experience it yourself as not only an observer, but as an experiencer. At least that was my approach. It wasn't so much doing investigations at purported haunted locations. There was a lot of other research and direct personal experience that allowed me to see the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where I'm at now. And this interview itself is pivotal for me because after, you know, this time that I told you that I left my whole life behind to explore this 100% or completely, I'm now at the point where I've returned to my normal life, you know, and the grind, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's I guess, my time to share my discoveries, my experiences, mm-hmm. That kind of thing, so...
Yeah, yeah. It was. I know what you mean. I know the year before Joanne passed away, the Christmas before, we were in. It was Christmas? No, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, the night after Christmas, the morning of the 26th of December, and neither one of us smoked. And we were living in a 35-foot fifth wheel, and I smelled tobacco smoke, you know, like knick knick. And yeah. I said something to Joanne. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. She was asleep, and I said, Joanne, do you smell something? I woke her up. She says, No. She says, you know, the baby's sleeping. Be quiet. And then about, I don't know, 10 minutes later, my son threw up all over the bed. And we got all, you know, what do you do other than just pull the sheets off the bed, just throw them out and put them back to sleep? And he got back to sleep, and the house smelled of that vomit. And a half hour later, she woke up and went, she says, "I smell it," you know. And it was like that was the beginning of a year of real eye-openers for me. And the next, exactly 365 days later to the hour, I'm with her best friend, Betty, who I had married after Joanne died a few months later. And we're at my mom's and dad's house in the basement. They have never smoked in this house. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I smell Connect again. And I said, "Betty, do you smell that?" "Nope." But about 10 minutes later, she did. And it was really a strange experience. To Native people, spirits are, they're just like you and me. And once in a while, they come knocking. Not sure what all that meant, but I'm sure there was a ghost or a spirit of some kind involved. But I know what you mean about you get that rush of things that happen, and then you settle down to the grind, and I can relate. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, exactly. Just go ahead.
Well, I was just going to interject right quick about a basic explanation of why it's very common to either smell smoke or a scent, you know, a cologne, mm-hmm. you know, flowers, mm-hmm. and it's all based on density. So my conclusions have been one of density. In other words, as we go through the layer, through the onion, if you will, of the dimensions, it's a matter of density. And so, this is, I think, one of the very important things, too, is that, you know, when people talk, well, spirit, I saw spirit here, whatever. And I think that people have a general view of spirit as being a non-physical thing. And the reality is that it may not be physical in this layer of the onion, but in the layer that you're in, you're just as physical as you are here.
Right. Well, you know that rumored experiment about the dead body that's weighed, you know, right at the moment of death, and it's, you know, a couple ounces difference, you know, and what has it been about? I don't know. 10 right. years ago, they discovered that 70% of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and it's a different kind of matter, but matter nonetheless. And I think that little bump that bumped my bed that night after Betty died, I think that was her spirit. And she had been under the influence of heavy drugs, you know, for a while. I think she was just coming up out of the haze, and that's why she said, "When did this happen?" But the other thing, I've heard these stories about smells, and people report a person's cologne or the tobacco that they smoke. And my friend Robert...
If you think about it, if you look at smoke, for instance, it's not as dense as, you know, a drinking glass. Now it's been diluted, but it's matter. It's still in the end, nothing is solid. Our description of matter is in itself a denser form of energy. You know, and in the end, it's just all energy, and it's all empty. Almost, you look at the atom, you know, at 99.9% being, you know, if you will, in our view of things, you know. And so in the end, it's just energy in its form of density, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so as dense as you are, that's the dimension that you exist in, based on your density.
Right. Well, my friend Robert Shrewsbury built a nuclear resonance magnetometer, and he makes his living finding things, you know, $1,000 a day. If I don't find it, I'll get paid. But he would sit here, if he were here, he would say everything is frequency, and everything has a magnetic field, and different things have different frequencies, and you smell the perfume or that someone wore. I mean, they wore it for so long; it became part of them. you know, it soaked into them. And I know there's certain essential oils, like rose oil has a very high frequency. And for thousands of years, you know, oils were the drugs. I mean, they essential oils, when you apply them to the bottom of your feet or the small of your back, they soak right into the pores, and within 20 minutes, they soak right through the blood-brain barrier. And, you know, if you're constipated, just put some oil of fennel on, and no problem. And there's all kinds. I've cured many a case of bladder infections, you know, within 24 hours just by having people drink. You know, anyway, but frequency is real important, and I think, I don't know whether ghosts have absorbed those frequencies, and that's the reason why they manifest them, or whether they're able to use them to get us to realize, you know, what's going on, and it's really them, and it's a token or something. Hard to know.
Well, it's let's, and so their manifestation is that's why there's a lot of you know, candle magic, for instance, or mm-hmm. anything that's more less dense, you know. And so that's kind of their avenue of manifestation, because they're in that density level. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it's well, you know, one thing's for sure, like Hank Williams said in the song, you'll never get out of this world alive, and everybody talks about, it's like death's like the weather, everybody talks about it and no one does anything about it, you know. So what can we
yeah.
do?
What right, right. But like you mentioned earlier, there is no such thing as death. And I think
no.
that the Native Americans in their culture, you know, it's part of their upbringing, you know, the rain dances, the peyote rituals, all these things that open up your mind to these
mm-hmm.
higher realities. You know, it's kind of a very normal thing, and it's a grander, almost bird's eye view of reality as it really is. I think that, you know, here at least, you know, we're brought up with, you know, for the most part, just whatever is solid is real, whatever isn't. But in the end, nothing is solid. When it becomes really, really solid, it becomes a black hole. When it,
mm-hmm.
it reaches the pop, as I call it, or the point, you know, the horizon, the event horizon. I mean, when it really just becomes, it becomes, you know, a tear in the fabric of time and space, and then it encompasses everything, you know. But so yeah, I mean, nothing is solid, and it just loops on itself almost, you know, at that point.
Well, any theoretical physicist would say, you know, 99% of any atom is it's space, you know. So everything we perceive around us that's solid, and none of it's solid, none of it. It just feels
right.
that way because, you know, because we're at a low vibration, and but vibratory rate has something to do with all this, because the first time I ever asked, I insisted on an answer to a prayer. I was awake, and I said, "Okay, you know," I said, "I want to know some things," and I asked a couple questions, but my body felt like it was vibrating, like, you know, when you one of those old motels when you put the dime in the box, and you know, that kind of vibrator, you know. And I've woken up dozens of times, you know, from sleep, having that feeling of vibration. And I know other people have too. And yeah, and you know, and if you look at the seances and stuff, you hear this subject being go ahead.
Well, I think that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think that's one of the key effects or indicators of right before you have an out-of-body experience. For anybody who's had a genuine body experience, out-of-body experience, And now I hear a lot of people say, yeah, you know, I might have had an out. But, well, if anybody says they've had an out-of-body experience and they say, I think I've had one, then they haven't had one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you're out of your body, you know. I mean, you're seeing yourself there. But going back to, you know, the point, you leave your body, you feel this undulation of a wave energy going throughout your, you know, from head to toe, you know, and it's kind of like the indicator, you know, as, you know, when you're going through the experience, it's kind of like the, you know, it's like you're there, you're almost there. Now be patient. Don't be scared. You know, hold on, relax, and just go with it. But you do have that big, you know, you feel a big wave going through your body. I mean, up and
mm-hmm.
you know, and perhaps you were on the cusp of projecting, is what I was wanting to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost forgot. I did have one other experience. We knew Joanne was getting close to passing one day, and Betty and I were staying at a mutual friend's house up about 50 miles north of where Joanne was staying with a close friend of hers who was a nurse and during those last few weeks. And we knew she'd probably pass that day, so that morning we got in the car and I'm driving, and this is Utah, I'm driving south between Brigham City and Salt Lake City. On the right-hand side, there's nothing but reeds in the Salt Lake, and left-hand side, you know, is the lane of the freeway, and all of a sudden, I can see everything around me. I can drive. I can see to drive. But a vision, I could see Joanne laying down, her head's to my left or toward the east, and her feet toward the west, and it was like a crystalline vision, and she sat bolt upright, and I'm driving down the road watching this, you know, but the vision was like white on white and kind of crystalline, and she sat bolt upright and had the most unbelievable surprised look on her face, and then it was over with, and I looked at Betty and I said, hey, what time is it? She says 10 o'clock, right on the nose. I said, remember that? I said, and I told her what happened. Sure enough, we got to the airport because my son had been put on a plane 30 days previous, and it was arranged that he months previous he was going to go visit his grandparents in Tennessee, and he landed about an hour after she passed away, and Janine and her husband John, you know, walked up to the gate and looked at me, and just started opening their mouth, and I said, Joanne passed away exactly 10 a.m. And they said, how did you know? And I said, we knew. And the other interesting thing about it is Indians believe that when people, they don't call it dying, they call it walking west, and they go to the spiritual camp in the west, which is the direction that Joanne was looking when she passed away, and at least in the vision. So, yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, still strange experiences, but I don't have any fear to death. I don't know anybody that hangs around with traditional Native people that is afraid. You know, it's like the Apache. You know, they knew they couldn't beat the white man, but they knew they'd win in the end by dying free of them.
Well, I think that one of the most interesting things of the near-death experience or the near-death experiencer is that most experiencers don't want to come back, you know, so much to the point that there's been cases where they go as far as, you know, scenarios where their own life to return to that existence or that reality. And, you know, it's our source. It's where, you know, we have our being. You know, as beings of energy, the less dense you are, you know, the more connected you are, the more cosmic you are, the more in tune to the source, which is pure energy.
That's right. That's right. I think the creator is an electromagnetic force. It pervades. It explains why the creator can be everywhere and nowhere, present everywhere at any one time. Could record everything that's going on everywhere at one time, because all matter. We know that electromagnetism extends into the spirit realm and crosses that boundary. And I think, you know, seems to be the force that holds the universe together, if you know what I mean. And but anyway, why don't we take just a brief couple minute break and give you a chance to we'll pay a bill. And we'll come back and come back and talk some more. How's that sound?
Unless you want,
if you're in the mood, I won't interrupt you.
No. I think it'd be good to grab another glass of wine, and and also perhaps we can also take some calls.
Absolutely,
interesting to have, get some questions and.
Absolutely. And, yeah, absolutely. So, folks, we'll be back in a little less than 2 minutes.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklavan Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us. today.
Well, we're back, and we had a huddle in the screening room. We decided we were going to open up the telephones. If you'd like to speak with us, give us a call at 347-996-3318. It's right on the page that you're listening to this interview, 347-996-3318. Feel free to call in, but Fox wanted to take the discussion in a little bit different direction. So while we're waiting for call, you know, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I think one of the things that a lot of people are concerned with, or are really, it's kind of in the mass consciousness, if you will, is, you know, 2012, I think that's just one of the things that people have really, you know, talked about or wondering what's going to happen, you know. There's so many different avenues that, you know, people are trying to explore, and I think that's something that would be, especially now, you know, we're probably, you know, what are we now, 8 months away from December 21st? And anyways, I think that there's been some information that I have that perhaps would be informative. And
sure. What do you know?
Now I can't say everything. I mean, because I think that, you know, in the next couple months, maybe there's more information that could be exchanged or shared. But, It's a very complicated matter. There's a lot of agendas involved. There's a lot of beings involved. You know, there's a lot of different elements that are playing into this whole, boiling point.
Well, I know what you mean. Yeah, I interviewed two Mayan elders a few years ago, and Hunbot's men, he just kind of said, you know, this is off mic, it wasn't during the interview, but he said, you know, he says, I just don't understand, he says, some of our white friends, he says, they know a couple of dozen glyphs, and, you know, we know them all, and he says they're making like, there's something written in stone about December 21st. He says, we have never taught that. And I says, I don't teach that. He says, we've always taught that, you know, it could be 10 or 15 years either way. And what's going to happen really depends on the consciousness of people that are on the planet. And they just said they just know that something big's going to happen. And they're pretty much as mystified as we are on the subject.
Well, just so you know, or just so the whoever might be listening or who will be listening in the future, is that my mother is actually from Mérida, Yucatán. My grandfather is actually a scholar in his own right that lived in Yucatán for all his life. He spoke Mayan. He was very versed in the culture, in the ancient culture, I would say initiatory practices of the culture and the legends and the oral tradition of the Mayan culture itself. You know, one of my early childhood experiences was going every year to El Castillo in Chichen Itza and observing, you know, the grandeur of the architecture of the civilization that it was, you know, and so there was a lot of discussion about that, you know, as what happened to the Mayans, their practices, their culture, the prophecies that tied into 2012 and the calendars and all that. So you know, and these were things that we discussed. You know, I was the youngest, so you know, I was probably 8-10 years old. And it was an open discussion about these things. And a lot of it, you know, my grandfather still spoke the language, you know, and he actually did a lot of translation from Spanish to the dialects. But anyways, what I'm getting at is that it's something that I guess it's been around me all my life as far as you know, as far as the calendars, what they talked about and all.
Sure.
That. But I think that based on my exposure to that world and to that in-depth exploration, it's very simply a dimensional shift. And what I'm trying to get at is that the dimension right above us, as Einstein called it, is the dimension of time. Okay? So as we move into that dimension beyond time, where time bends, if you will, then all the linear calendars, all of them, whether it's the Gregorian, the Mayan, no longer apply. You see? So it doesn't end because of any other reason, but simply because it's no longer valid in a existence or a reality. You see what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm. Well, what you're saying is people are going to and people seem to be stopping thinking linearly and through whatever avenue, you know, whether it's spirit investigation or looking into prophecy or myths or changing their religion. People are out there. They're out there looking.
Right. And not only that, I mean, you know, let's tie in some, you know, some multicultural prophecy elements. You know, let's go right to the, you know, the very mainstream Christian, you know, one of the things, you know, it's talked about is a rapture. Okay. Well, growing up for me, that was very difficult. You know, I was like, how could just people just all of a sudden disappear? And, you know, now it's kind of like it's very easy to explain. And let me just give you a perfect example. And I think that most people think when they see a spirit or a ghost, I think that most people think it's a mist, you know, or the general consensus is it's like a, you know, a mist or a shadow or something. But in reality, after, you know, after all the encounters I've had, and after all the interviews and interviews of all the people that I've investigated, when they see the apparition, it's as dense as you and I are.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely dense. You can see everything. It's like almost like, you know, I just saw you and all of a sudden you disappeared. Now, so what happens is, so is the dimension thins based on, you know, geomagnetic conditions, electromagnetic, static, etc. Under those right conditions, that happens. So the veil thins, and you can see that being, which is still physical, manifests physical being, and all of a sudden he disappears. So here you have somebody that's in the fourth dimension, right? Comes in, you can see him for a little bit, and he disappears. Okay, now what's happening, what's going to happen in the transition from the third to fourth and fifth dimension is that, okay, you have a physical being in the third dimension, all of a sudden might disappear because of his vibration. You see? So it's almost like a ghost. You'll see that effect. So now, So the rapture itself, as he's going through this dimensional shift, you're going to see people all of a sudden dematerialize.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes something explainable if you're looking at it from a multidimensional perspective,
which is
the structure of the universe, or the onion, as I call it.
Uh-huh.
Now let's go to the Hopis, or let's talk about the return, or even Quetzalcoatl. You know, the return of the gods.
Uh-huh.
These higher dimensions, just as much as they are here, there's beings of all sorts, all varieties, all, you know, configurations. And these are the and, you know, they're not gods, but they're what we, as third-dimensional beings, have made out to be gods. And so, you know, when we step foot into that other dimension, you see these manifestations of these so-called gods.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other one? I mean, what's the other big thing about 2012? We got time, the calendar's ending, the return of the gods.
Around to that dark rift in the that you can look right through the center of the galaxy.
That's exactly what a lot of people don't take into consideration, is that, okay, we're going to be aligned in the center of, which is a supermassive black hole. Now, if you look at a black hole, what is a black hole? It's simply a tear in the fabric of time and space. It literally is a hole in that fabric that we call time and space. So basically, it means that it's a region beyond time and space, you see? And so that's the energy that we're aligning to. We're aligning to that dimension, that existence, that reality beyond time and space. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it can be uncomfortable to think about a reality beyond time and space, but that's why it's important for people to explore practices that allow you to beyond the veil, that allow you to explore realities beyond this, you know, layer. of the onion. And, you know, then it becomes very self-explanatory. It becomes very self-evident.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was going to look for what you're saying. I have a friend named Denny Troxell, and he's a traditional Cherokee teacher, and he teaches about time, and I wanted to see if I could find a reference to the way he explained the way time works. And keep talking for a minute. Let me see if I can find find this.
A very simple way to look at it: time is a third dimensional reality. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, and any out-of-body experience dissolves time. Any near-death experience resolves time. Any mystical experience dissolves time. Any chanting experience, any in the cave for 40 days and 40 nights, like Jesus Christ in the desert, dissolves time. All these experiences, whether it's chanting, whether it's darkness, complete darkness for 7 days, that's what it takes. And that's kind of a long shot in the societal structure of today. It's going to take 7 days of complete darkness. That'll do it. You know, fasting in itself, you know, higher the vibration.
Well, maybe what we're talking about here is just the alpha wave in our brain. Because go ahead.
In the end, every experience matches a physiological change in not only the body, but most importantly, in the brainwave activity. Absolutely and precisely, as you said it. Everything that happens is a reaction to the alpha brainwave state or theta. If you're asleep, you're in delta.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having a mystical experience, a separation of body occurs at theta, at 4.0 to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at 8.0, it's in quadrants. So you're in delta, you're below 4, you're asleep. At 4, you're having an out-of-body experience. At 8, you're having a very dreamy, you're daydreaming. You're in a meditative state. You know, at 12, you know, you're already reaching the point between beta and theta. You know, and so once you're at 16, you're hyper.
It sounds almost like harmonics.
And that's kind of one of the things that I mentioned on my site. You know, I did mention one thing, and I think this is one of the topics that you know, I think that you explore a lot on your channel is shamanism. Well, I'm kind of at least my exploration or my research or my experiences have been in more of what I have coined techno shamanism. And mm-hmm. when I add techno to it is that I'm adding, binaural beats. I'm adding, you know, mm-hmm. brainwave mapping.
Mm-hmm.
I have I'm doing biofeedback, mm-hmm. radionics, suppressed technologies. I mean, I'm exploring all these elements that are using technology to achieve the practices of chanting mm-hmm. in a cave. You know, I don't have
exactly.
time to chant. I don't have time to chant in the cave. I'm just going to put on my biofeedback machine. I'm going to put it at 4.0. I'm going to listen to some binaural beats, and I'm there.
Well, now Robert Shrewsbury, otherwise known as Chief Three Eagles, you know, he would
not on the show with me call that cheating, but I call it evolution of the technology.
Right. Well, I've been teaching for many years that this is a technology and that we just need to understand it. But Robert could probably give you the resonant frequency of ayahuasca and or cannabis, and to the point where if you had an oscillator, all you'd have to do is tune into that frequency, maybe tweak it a little bit depending on the phase of the moon, put on earphones, and it would put you under the influence of those substances, even though you haven't ingested them, because it's
right.
Frequency.
Right, absolutely. And all the trials that I've run, all the reports that I've had using that method have been effective, but they have been effective at the comparison of a very light dose,
mm-hmm.
which is still significant because you are, you know, tuning into the frequential equivalent of the chemicals or whatever, or,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it may be. But there's never the full effect.
Right.
I think that there may be an output from the electrical device. And that's kind of one of the things that I've been toying with is that, okay, how can we have the full effect with the frequential stuff? Is it an amplitude? What's going on? What's the missing element?
What Robert discovered was that, and there's a lot of people running around with these kinds of machines, but what he discovered, and he has proprietary information. He said the frequencies change very slightly every day, and he did a spreadsheet on them over a period of time, and he discovered. Well, actually, he was reading. He and I both have studied the Torah, and the Torah mentioned that after the flood, that the moon became the ruling body, and so he wondered whether the phases of the moon had anything to do. And sure enough, he found out that if you tweak the frequencies depending on the phases of the moon, then it helps him in hunting wherever he's hunting. And yeah, he's got it down to a science. I mean, you know, 6 months before those people that discovered the rubies down in Florida, you know, they were in his house, and but that's what he does for a living. And
what is his name?
His name is Robert Shrewsbury. He's at TerraFirmaAssayers.com, ASSAYERS.com, Terra Firma, TerraFirma. ASSAYERS.com.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now, folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library. 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now, folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Right, and you know, the reason I ask is because I think that some of the most some of the people that are coming across some of these what I would call breakthroughs in whatever field, you know, they're not as mainstream as you, and I think that, and again, I think it's because when you come across certain levels of information, it's not something you want to share with the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, and
sometimes
it'll
even get you killed.
Well, I don't think so much that. I think it's just that, you know, it's one of those things where if you're not prepared for certain level of information, mm-hmm. then, you know, it's of no use to even try to exchange it.
That's right.
So, in other words, if I'm trying to talk calculus to a third grade student, you know, I'm wasting my time. Unless, of course, he was, you know, really into the subject or whatever. But there's definitely always a well-deserved element of secrecy in certain topics or information because, you know, and I'm not so against or so for people that I really want to just outpour and just, you know, talk about everything. I'm kind of neutral in that because I personally think that, you know, again, you know, there's certain things that people are ready for, and certain people that are not, and certain most people are not. But you know, we're getting to that the veil thinning. You know, it's time to loosen up a little bit. You know, and really get this out to the public to really, at least those who are really looking for it to kind to be informed on certain things and. But you just can't say everything. I think that, you know, it goes back to a quote, an open quote by Aldous Huxley that says, "Ye shall know the truth, but the truth shall drive you mad."
Yeah.
Close quote.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah. I've recently been doing a lot of reading, about a holy man by the name of Philip Savage, and there was one time that, you know, he had to feign insanity, you know, and I had another friend that in order to save his life, and I have another friend that spent 10 days in the Russian compound in Israel, and he was a non-Jewish Zionist. And he got in trouble with the powers that be, and they threw him in a cell with four Palestinian terrorists. And he feigned, he knew if he was going to live through, you know, whatever, he'd have to feign insanity. And you know, they, you know, if you're insane, well, then you're touched and you're closer to Creator. And so, yeah, you know what you mean. But, yeah, you're right. And, you know, you were probably instructed by your grandparents. There were certain things you just didn't talk about. But I know the elders, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, the Hopi elders decided that they needed to come out. And, you know, and the Bible says that the time would come when things that were hidden before the foundation of since before the foundation of the world would be shouted from the housetops. And that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah, it's just part of the oral tradition.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of, you know, the Native Americans had it, the Mayans had it. You know, it's just... the oral tradition, not only was it passed on orally, but it was passed on to those who were prepared to even listen to it, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe in it. I still think that there's certain things that nobody needs to know. No one in their right, you know, in their capacity to understand or even know. And, you know, that's where I'm kind of neutral about the whistleblowers. There's certain things that you don't need to be talking about, you know, there's certain secrets that people don't need to know, You know, they're having a hard time making sense of all the, you know, all the things going on, and it just creates more confusion.
Mm-hmm.
But it is now good to open up. You know, 2000 on the corner. There's some very big cosmic alignments, energetic, because you know, when you look at energy, we're all energy. So there's energetic alignments that are influencing us. There is a lot of elements. There's not only an energetic influx, but also a agenda of different races and beings from places and distant corners of the universe that. You know, the world and the universe is fully alive. You know, you look up at a distant star, that star has life. Every single star that you look at in the night sky has life, every one of them. And so you have to start looking at diversity and liveliness in the universe, and you have to embrace it. You can't look at some being that, you know, that looks like a lizard or a dragon as something foreign. He is the universe of our very being, our very existence, you know, and you have to embrace it. You have to embrace it with the thing that they hate, which is acceptance and love and unconditional love. You know, there's certain beings that don't like those vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way we can expel, and I'm not going to give any specific names to races, because I think we all know, at least those that are in the know, is that if we want to really take control of everything, we have to bombard our atmosphere with those vibrations that those beings can't handle, which
mm-hmm.
are acceptance, unconditional love.
Make love a virus, like in War of the Worlds.
Exactly.
Yeah, the virus is love.
And so the beings that are feeding off the negative energy, which is in racism, and all this, what falls into the realm of the dark forces, we eliminate that. We eliminate them without us even thinking about eliminating them, because they just can't handle the vibration of that. You know, so it's simple as that. And you know, as long as we continue to hate and to fight and to segregate and to separate, then they're feeding and they're having a jolly good old time, and they're going to be here. And, you know, that's going into realms that are a little more complicated than we could really get into. But, you know, without giving any names or specifics, I think that, you know, it's very simple. It's very simple, and it resolves the whole gloom and doom scenario of 2012. Because what it is, it's simply that. It's simply everything towards a destructive, apocalyptic event. But that comes down to the essential teaching of the Mayas, or of every prophetic culture, is that when they looked at this date, this quickening, this, you know, all these forces coming together, they saw one thing, and they saw potentiality. They saw possibilities. Is it going to go this way? Is it going to go destruction? Or is it going to be the age of a new dawn, of a new existence? And it's just that. It's like you said earlier in the show, and you coined it, Blue Otter, you said precisely that. You said it is based on the consciousness of us, of me, of you. What are we expecting? What are we expecting to happen? And as we all expect, we're all routine effect, and especially when we're talking about these higher dimensions. These higher dimensions are dimensions of mind, of thought projections, of emotions, and so all these things are manifesting instantly. But the second you think of it, it happens. It is occurring. It is a reality. And so as we're moving into this shift, this global event, you know, it is an event of complete potentiality based on our consciousness, our ability to see and expect what it is that we want. And I think people need to wake up to that. The power within each and every one of us as creators, as little g gods, as Red Elk calls them, because I interviewed Red Elk, and I thought that was one of the things that little g gods, co-creators in this whole reality. And in the end, I think that's the focus. It's the evolutionary step that we need to take, and that is unconditional love, light, and unity. Because that is the essence of the universe. That is the essence of the cosmos and the essence of order. And that's it. It's simple as that. Love, light, unity. Period. Nothing else. And all the beings that resonate to that will inhabit that realm. Every other being that doesn't, that can't handle that, they leave. And they're in another sector. You see?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Have you ever heard of Alex Collier? He's a UFO speaker on a UFO subject, and
Well, for the public, I will say this one thing: regardless of anything that he says, you said when it comes to, you know, the unity, the acceptance, whether he was a contactee or not does not matter. Everything that he's saying in the field of acceptance, of waking up, is completely valid, and not only valid, but I think it's to be admired. And I think that he has some very good information to share, and I think that you should definitely do a thorough research into what he's sharing and what he's talking about, because I think it's very well very well shared and very well laid out, you know, and I think he has a magical way of making things very complex and very cosmic,
mm-hmm.
and something very simple. I think it's he's somebody you definitely want to listen to.
Yeah, I like the idea that they're leaving the planet. And I didn't discover him till the end of 2009, and I haven't listened to him, you know, in a couple of years, but I listened to what he had to say, and I went, yeah, that'd be nice if those native entities just left.
Well,
and left us to pick.
Right, and it goes back to what I said earlier. I mean, there's a lot of different agendas. There's a lot of different races involved. That's just it. You know, the universe is filled with life, completely filled to the rim. And not only is it filled to the rim, but there's hybridization occurring at all times throughout every corner of the universe. So there's always a creative element, diversity element, you know, being practiced. I mean, you know, one person that said something very interesting recently that I had never heard of was Sani Sito, who is claims to be a incarnation of a gray hybridized alien, who says that God, you know, the acronym for God is geneticist of diversity.
Well, yeah.
And that really caught my ear, because that's what creation is about. It's about and when you have the technology to create things and all that, then you're going to use it, and a lot of it seems to be geared toward the hybridization. And do I have some stories with the hybrids?
Well, yeah, that, you know, John Red Hat, I think he'd agree, because he said that the hallmark of a creator is diversity, and he says the different colors are just different color flowers in his garden.
Right, right. I think that's the way we got to look at it. If we look at all the races in the universe as flowers in the garden, then I think we're going to be good because we're not going to be fearful. We're not going to be scared. We're going to be prepared for the diversity of the universe. And when we're talking about diversity, it's in every layer of the onion. It's not only in the, you know, in the mammal. You know, it's not only in the reptiles. It's not only in minerals. It's everywhere, you know, and we have to look at it like that. I mean, you know, we have to look at these. I think that's one of the reasons why the governments haven't come forward with this, because I think we're kind of uncomfortable. I think we're kind of uncomfortable about, you know, having humanoid, and that's kind of the key here, humanoid mm-hmm. beings that are humanoid like us, bipedal, walk on 2 feet, that are very different. I think we're almost, the informers are kind of gauging the you know, the public consciousness. Are they prepared for this? You know, are they prepared for us telling the truth? And a lot of us are not, because a lot of people don't even really have their head up their ass so far that they don't, you know.
Know what clean air smells like.
You know, it's like Tony Montana said, you have your head up your ass, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you got to.
I don't want to go out with the whole Tony Montana thing, but that's kind
people
of...
People like that, they need to have a... You know what a plexicotomy is? A plexicotomy is a surgical procedure where they put in a pane of glass so you can see out. Yeah, gotcha.
But that goes exactly to what I said. Not all information could be shared to the public. Although we live in a digital, revolutionary, you know, internet society, there's things you shouldn't say, and she prepared for it. So, you know, I would just say one thing. You know, it's like, you go back to Arthur C. Clarke, and he coined it. And he said, you know, any technology that is sufficiently advanced seems like magic.
Yeah.
And so anything as cosmic as some of this information is going to seem like a movie. And yeah, not only that, but, you know, I mean, you know, most of what, you know, is quote-unquote insiders are positioned to make movies out of those things that they want to create as a fictionalized element of reality.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
But we won't get too much into that, because I think that, you know, then it blurs everything. But everything you see in the movies that relates to somebody telling you, yeah, this is what happened, this is what I saw, you better believe it, because, I mean, that they made a movie out of it just so you...
Well, sure.
But, you know...
Yeah, it's like science fiction was going to introduce us to what was going to happen, and, you want to hear something strange. Back in 2005, I became aware of Patrick Gerald's website, so I contacted him, and of course he's the one that's saying, "Oh, hey, we're going to have flooding," you know, now the one of the first things I learned, and of course, you know, the last glyph of the Mayan calendar, you know, is water being poured out of a large vessel, and there could possibly be, and if you believe John Paul, there could be flooding in different places in the world. There could be earth changes.
Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting about that and how it becomes almost multicultural is that we're talking. So it's one thing that a lot of people don't bring up when it comes to 2012 and such is that we are also talking about the beginning of a new age on the precession of the equinoxes of the Aquarian Age.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the Aquarius? The Aquarius is the water bearer. You know, not only is he the water bearer, but he's also, you know, the constellation of Aquila, you know.
Mm-hmm, the eagle. And water is the universal solvent.
And also Ganymede, which is the wine bearer of the gods, you know. And so that you got all these multicultural things that are coming into this one specific alignment. And it's very energetic. It's so energetic that you better be prepared for and this is one thing I was not going to say. But I'll say now because I think that, you know, it's something to keep your eyes open for is that it has been confirmed for me and to me based on, you know, a certain level of awareness and not only awareness but communication through EVP technology and instrumentation. Let's call it instrumentation. That there's spirits, a certain type that will be visible in this dimensional shift. And so, in other words, the only reason why you're seeing so much activity, the only reason why you're seeing ghost hunters on TV in the last 10 years, why you're seeing thousands of groups throughout the world, you know, exploring this paranormal, quote-unquote, field, is because there's so many reports of spirits, materialization, supernatural events, you know, and that's simply because we're moving into that realm beyond the curtain, beyond the veil. And so are they going to be visible manifestations? Yes, very much so. And are there, you know, and so... Anyways, what else can I say about that?
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's just we're right hard up against something that's going to happen. And I think most people in the world are, well, you know, when insurance companies run these flippant commercials about, oh, well, according to the Mayan calendar, you know, gravity's going to stop and everybody's going to fly. You know, when you get total BS like that, you know, most people just stop listening. And then you've got the diehards and then you have, I think most people, a lot of people are like us. They really want to know and their minds are open and not so much that their brains fall out, you know, hopefully. And, but the most important thing that I want to underline is we really don't have any fear. You shouldn't have any fear. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And, you know, we are physical beings, but we do live forever. We're just borrowing these shells. So, you know, whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's from a real unexpected source, you know, the great I don't even want to call him great. I think the famous contemporary artist Andy Warhol said, you know, I don't think we ever die. I just think we go to department stores.
Yeah, yeah.
And
we go to where we find out where the sunglasses were went when we lost them. You know, like Floyd Red Crow Westerman said. You know, Andy Warhol did a famous print of Dennis Means, Russell Means.
Right.
Yeah, really. And I interviewed him back in 2008, and he's quite a guy. He's just recently survived esophageal cancer, and he used a special kind of water. There's all kinds of interesting modalities that are coming out, and Kangean water or something like that, and I've got a friend that invented something called intelligent water, and it's probably got something like some hydrogen 3 in it that's really good for your body or something. Go ahead.
Right. I think that's a very interesting and important and essential field to explore is water, the basic component, H2O, because it has such a good element of memory. You know, it holds memory very well. And what I say by memory is mental projections, mental emotions, mental images. And it's funny because, you know, I've seen a lot of the current work with Masaru Emoto, Japanese researcher, with crystallization of that. And if you think about the old classic ways of clairvoyance or of a bowl of water, of gazing into a bowl of water.
Mm-hmm. Optical depth, it's called.
And I think that water is back to what we said earlier about the density. It becomes almost a element. It's not so dense, so it's closer. It's a window almost into the mm-hmm. less dense, the lesser dense layer of the onion right beyond us. And it's interesting because I've developed a technique of spirit photography that's based on not the reflection of water, but even thinner, the vapor coming from water. And, I'm not going to really share too much information because I think that, extreme people go out there and they use it for barbaric almost means, they go to jail.
Right.
I mean, they go to asylums. I mean, do people really want to see that? Do they want to see all the bottom feeders of the astral realm, of the spirit world? Do they want to talk to? And that's what that's kind of what I don't like about it, but the whole, I'm so kind of distant from what you see on TV and all this stuff. I think it emphasizes too much on the bottom feeders. And
sensational.
And so anyway.
That's what's sensational. But the ancient Greeks.
I don't want to cut you off, but
that's all right.
I really think that it should be something almost normal.
Yeah.
And every kind of like you're just communicating, like you're talking on the phone, something more human, something more real and more visceral and raw and just
mm-hmm.
it's natural. It's just when these voices are coming through, they want to talk. It's just like, don't you want to talk to your dad? Isn't that the normal thing to do? When you're in another realm all of a sudden, don't you want to talk to your mom, to your dad? Don't you want to let them know that if you're alive, don't you want to let them know that you're alive? Yes, you do. You do want to let them know because that's important. That's important that they know because they will soon be with you in that realm of pure existence, of pure, you're alive. You're still, you don't change. You're you.
This life is just a dream. That's the real world. Where they're at. That's where we live forever. But, the Greeks, when they wanted to talk with their dead relatives, I think what they did is they went into a cave and there was a big cauldron, black in color, full of water, and it was called an optical depth. And I remember that they'd go in there and speak to their relatives. And,
right.
And the Cherokee every year had a ceremony called the Bounding Bush Ceremony, and it's at the very same time of the Jews have the Festival of Booths, And basically, they just, you know, they build a fire and, you know, a square enclosure, and they go in there and build a fire, and there's a smoking fire in there, and they go in there and they would speak to their dead relatives. And so, you know, you've got flame and fire and smoke. And you know, combining, you know whatever, and it helped help the exchange and people to get in touch with each other and do it privately. So it's
right.
It's not like it's not historically passed down to us that it could be done. It's just not done.
Right. And I think those are, like you said, and you keyed on them. Those are the elements. Those are the elements of density. When you're talking about smoke, it's less dense. When you're talking about liquid, it's less dense. When you're talking about vapor, it's way less dense. So if you really want to get, you know, and I'm going to kind of code it in a kind of a very, what's the word? Almost symbolic reference to those paranormal researchers that really want to make a name for themselves, whoever they are, is this. Focus your energy on substances that are less dense, and not only less dense, but also reflection and light. Those three elements. Light, reflection, and elements that are less dense. And if you can do those things, then you will see things that the world will never, ever see, unless you really want to bring it to the public, but I don't. I will tell you one thing, Blue Otter. The things that I've seen, observed in my lab, are so 1,000 years beyond here now that I don't even want to share with anybody. You know, I think about it, and, you know, it's like, I don't. Why? Why? Because it cracks the whole egg wide open. In other words, there's no further mysteries, there's no further questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that kind of hammer, like Thor's hammer that cracks the egg in half and unveils the mysteries,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give Thor's hammer to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. In fact, my research has been concluded. I will say right now, my research has been concluded because it's just too much for the world to handle.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I'm saying, you know, in the public forum, and you know what, I don't care. But I will tell you one thing. You know, some people are talking about, let's share information. You know, if I share information with somebody that's not prepared to have it, you know, and he's going to share with somebody else, you know, I mean, I don't know where it's going to end up.
You can be held. One of the things I was taught by my traditional teachers is that...
And it goes back to the oral tradition.
If your mouth's too big, you can be held responsible for teaching somebody something they weren't ready to hear. It could be a stumbling block. Paul, the Apostle Paul, talked about it.
Right. But, you know, just and I'll repeat it again, you know, light, reflection, and elements that are smoke, and I'll be specific, smoke, vapor, and mist, and light, and refraction of light, and reflective surfaces. I will say that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of my exchange, and it goes back to what you said earlier about not proprietary, and my research and my conclusions are not proprietary. They're secret.
Yeah,
we don't need to know. Period. They don't.
Exactly.
They will never know because they're not ready to know. Simple as that.
Well, you know, there's some things that your creator will tell you that only you are supposed to. To hear, because it's just for you, and you have to be careful.
Well, the thing is that this is it. This is just the bottom line, Blue Otter. I will tell you one thing. You know, the speech or the conclusions and the data are very pivotal in a what we call, what I call, a fourth dimensional camera, which means that you put on these goggles and you're seeing into that dimension based on not only the density, but the electromagnetic spectrum precisely that you need to be looking at. And so how am I going to share information on somebody's going to put on a mask and see all the spirits?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Now, do I have it? No, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you. I figured a little bird told me, I don't know how, maybe I didn't know you were from Texas, and but something told me, I couldn't even see your face or anything, or I don't know where you're from, but something told me that you had a Mayan Hispanic background. I don't know how I knew that, because I couldn't see your face, and I've never listened to your show.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, because I will tell you one thing, that the objective is one thing, and it's to be precisely informative on certain things, and that's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
And on top of that, I think that the general consensus of the group of spirit investigators was that there will never be a show of, you know, there will never be a motive or a motivation to be on a show or, you know, be world famous for, you know, spectacles on, you know, nonsensical spectacles on TV. It was always about the serious research, and there was a certain mask behind, you know, the voice. And the mask is simply that. It's simply to create an effect via consciousness or the spoken word or, I guess you can say, you know, as the orator or the oracle, you know, or spoken word. You know, it was never meant to be, I'm this and I'm that and this is who I am. You know, it was always, and a lot of it has to do because, I'll be honest with you, you know, there's members of the group, there are political figures, there's, you know, you know, I'm personally a very, you know, private, you know, there's always a veil into the veil. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep. And,
and I think that one of the main reasons why is because I think that when you listen to people without knowing who they are, and you just sit there and listen, it has more of an effect than to know who it's coming from. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you don't need to know who I am. Just listen.
Don't believe anything I tell you. Just prove it for yourself. Exactly. And by the way, we've only got about 10 minutes left on the show. If anybody wants to call in, here's your chance. We're 347-996-3318. And come on, I know we got some people out there that would like to ask Fox a question. And so you like Fox? Yeah, it's I was lucky enough to years ago when I was looking at my genealogy, something told me that there had to be one member of the family that still had the information, pre-Columbian information about my Cherokee family. Sure enough, I found him. And back in, he knew the names of the ancestors in the family, Chunky Gal Mountain in the old Wolf Clan territory. And the oldest ancestor I know of, his name was Running Fox. And so foxes are cool.
I'll
just
say
too bad
much,
all the fleas they get.
Yeah, well, I'll say this much: my Conacher or alias, whatever you want to call it, came from my early experiences when I was 18 years old. Long story short, I was a very big romantic, poetic. You know, I would talk to girls that I really liked, you know, through the wee hours of the morning. You know, in high school, we all do that, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes this girl, she's like, you know what, Fox, you know, well, she didn't call me Fox at the time, but anyways, she's like, I think you should be on the radio. And normally, you know, one would say, nah, you're kidding. But I was like, really? Are you serious? Do you really think you're doing the radio? She's like, yes. So the next day, Blue Otter, I called a local radio station. And I told them that, you know, I wanted to be a DJ. And they're like, okay, come on into the studio. So I did a recording in both Spanish and English. You know, it's a bilingual town where I live at. And so, anyway, so I record on the old reel machine. And I go home and I wake up the next day to a call. And they're like, hey, you know, we need a DJ. Why don't you start tomorrow? And I was like, okay, cool. So anyway, so I'm on there. And everything happens so fast. Boom, 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 one day to the next day, I'm like at the radio station. I'm like, so what are they going to ask for? And I'm like, I'm Fox.
Cool.
And that's where it all started. You know. So yeah, it was kind of my DJ name, Fox, on a radio station. Then had a relation to the Fox. So yada yada, and. So since then, it's been Fox. And, you know, it's almost come to the point where I'm kind of like Madonna, you know, one name, or like Prince.
Well, I don't know if I've ever told this story about how I got Blue Otter, but my Lakota brethren probably know that, you know, as you go through life, your traditional name changes. And, you know, there's people out there on the internet. I mean, all I have to do is just put in the word Blue Otter and fraud, and you'll see all kinds of people that make fun of me. And
You're famous. I know you're famous.
Oh yeah,
famous.
Let me
interrupt you, Blue Otter. I'm gonna tell you one thing. The only reason why I'm doing this interview is because you are Blue Otter. There's no other reason why. If it would have been somebody else, I will tell you why. Because usually I'm on the other side of the microphone. I'm usually interviewing. And my focus has been on interviewing ex-Coast guests, one of which I know you've interviewed. So I thought it was kind of cool. I know you interviewed Red Elk. Red Elk is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And Heather Dahlberg is also a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like, I'm down for it. It's almost like a, you know, secondary word of mouth. You know,
I did Michael Horn, and I've done a few, and but I did about 12 interviews with Red Elk. But I've got a long line of BS, and so my first traditional teacher, his wife named me Talking Wind.
Well, we got 8 minutes. Let's get into some real good exchange of information, because I know we got eight minutes.
Go ahead. Well, I ended up with very briefly the night that the night after I went through Cherokee naming ceremony, the guy asked me, "Well, what do you want to be named?" And you know the previous name I gave him, but that night I heard the creator just say Blue Otter, you know, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I got a new name, and that's what I've been ever since. So, yeah, go ahead. We got about 9 minutes left.
What things is that, you know, we're living in the future. We literally are living in a very advanced civilization of pure information, of exchange, of awakening. And I think that we should be open to all these things that are higher dimensional, that are intellectual, and not only intellectual, but aggressively, aggressively intellectual, and that are aggressively exploratory into the realms that we are normally don't perceive. And we need to start looking at reality as psychic abilities and this and that. That's a bunch of hogwash. Let's look at it as in a very, you know, pragmatic, realistic way.
Mm-hmm.
What can you perceive? Now, if you can't perceive this and that, then engage in activities that allow you to.
Well, it needs to be demystified. Remember, all you Jesus fans out there, he said, all this stuff you see me do, you can do the same or even better. And all the traditional teachers I've met in Philippe Savage said the same thing. You know, he says, I can teach, if anybody thinks I'm the Messiah or something, he says, hey, we'll go out and randomly choose 12 children, and I'll give them the key of what I've got, and they'll go do the same thing.
Who said that?
Philip Savage.
Same
thing, basically. He's the last.
But is he Philip Savage?
He's the last of the line of the people from Brittany, the Druids.
Oh, okay.
And, he said, you know, like 50,000 people.
Well,
he was a major celebrity in France, and he was chased all over the world.
That's another thing. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, it should be at the point where, you know, there just shouldn't be so much metaphysical. There shouldn't be a metaphysical cloud surrounding these subjects. It's a very real. It's a very normal. Instead of paranormal, it should be normal.
Well, that's Remember, you know, you gun fans out there. Nine millimeter parabellum. Para means to prepare for. You know, we're preparing for you to understand it as normal.
Precisely. And, you know, it should be one of those things where it's like, you know, it's important for everybody to not only accept it as normal, but just, you know, engage in those activities that, you know, are normal. It's like, for instance, you know, I get a lot of, well, you know, you talk to spirits, you talk to this and that, and it's like, oh, my spiritual counselor told me not to do it. I mean, give me a break. Communication is essential in our evolution. What is evolution? It's communication with higher realms. And it's just, you know, communicate, accept the universe as something diverse,